Hi, for those of you who don't know me, my name is Patrick Miller, and I am the co-director of Crossing 20s alongside Andrea Wheely. And like a lot of you guys out there, I wear a lot of different hats in my life, and right now, one of my favorite hats is being a dad. My wife Emily and I, we've got one little girl. Her name is Iris, and she's 2 years old. And before Iris could walk, she has always loved to dance. I remember she's 10, 11 months old. Her very, very favorite thing to dance to was the La Land soundtrack. So it's Father's Day, so I need you guys just to indulge me for a second, because I'm about to be that parent who shows you a video of their child, and you don't have a choice. You have to watch it. So let's just watch this little video of Iris dancing. There you go. We call that the bob and wing. I have to confess, I have actually never seen La La Land, but I love watching my daughter dance. So I've listened to the soundtrack dozens and dozens of times. And I'm not sure when it happened, but at some point I started paying attention to the lyrics. And there was one song in particular that always struck me. It's a song about an actress, and she's busily trying to become a somebody. She's going to all the right parties, meeting all the right directors, meeting all the right producers. She's going to all the right tryouts, trying to get all the right gigs. The song is upbeat, it's exciting, it's up-tempo, it's fun. And then all of a sudden, it cuts down to a lull, and it turns melancholic. And she asks herself a question that I think maybe a lot of us have asked ourselves at some point in our lives. She says this: "Is someone in the crowd the only thing they'll ever see? I'm just watching while the world keeps spinning round." Have you ever felt like that song? You know, on the one hand, kind of the busy part, the exciting part, building the resume, you know, networking with the right people, trying to get more followers, more comments, more likes, trying to get the next promotion, trying to be the best salesman, trying to get the biggest paycheck, trying to get the biggest office, trying to meet the right people at school and at the gym and at the church, getting our kids into the right sports clubs, vacationing in the right places with the right people, busily trying to become a somebody wherever we are. But then we have the second moment too, don't we? We find ourselves asking ourselves, like, am I just a face in the crowd? I'll be honest with you guys, even though this is a little bit embarrassing. When I was in grad school early on, there was this professor, and he was really well-respected. Everybody liked him. They all wanted to get to know him, and so I wanted him to know who I was. And so, you know, I participated in class, I raised my hand, I did well on my assignments. I even went in and did one-on-one office hours with him. And so I will never forget, finally, at the end of the semester, I raised my hand and he called on me by name. The wrong name. You know, we've all had those moments, right? And maybe it's something like that. Someone forgets your name. They call you the wrong name. Or maybe it's getting passed over for a promotion. Or maybe it's a project being given to someone who has less experience than you. Maybe it's just small things. You know, like when someone walks up to you and they say, "Hey, are you coming to the party tonight?" And you smile and you nod, but you have no idea what they're talking about because you know you weren't invited. You see, we all have moments like that. Moments where we, if we're honest, feel like we're just somebody in the crowd. And it's disappointing and it's frustrating. It can even be embarrassing because on some level, we, like that actress in La La Land, feel like if we are going to have a meaningful, fulfilled, full life, then we gotta be a somebody. We gotta be a somebody. Right now at The Crossing, we're going through a sermon series called Extraordinary Nobodies in the Bible. And today we're gonna meet a character who's a lot like us. He is a face in a crowd, and his name is Malchijah. So towards the end of the Old Testament, the city of Jerusalem is destroyed, and the entire nation is taken to a place called Babylon. 70 years later, a band of Jews return to Jerusalem. Malchijah is descended from that band of Jews. And in his day, Jerusalem was in absolutely terrible condition. It was in ruin and rubble, burn remains. But the most important thing was that it didn't have a city wall. And in those days without a wall, there was no way to protect yourself from outside threats. A city without a wall in those days is about as secure as a mall parking lot at 3 a.m. And so, it was gonna take a huge crowd of workers to rebuild this enormous wall. Malchijah was just a face in that crowd of workers. Nehemiah chapter 3, it goes through all of the workers, it names all of them and lists the section of the wall that they repaired. And if you read this chapter, you're probably not only gonna be a little bit bored, eventually you are going to start to feel like you are lost in a crowd of names. So let's just have the experience. Let's hop into Nehemiah 3:1. Then Eliashib, the high priest, rose up with his brothers, the priests, and they built the sheep gate. They consecrated it and set its doors. They consecrated it as far as the Tower of the Hundred, as far as the Tower of Hananel. And next to them, the men of Jericho built. And next to them, Zakur, the son of Imri, built. The sons of Hasanah built the fish gate. They laid its beams and set its doors, its bolts, and its bars. And next to them, Meremoth, the son of Uriah, son of Hakaz, repaired. And next to them, Meshulam, the son of Bechariah, the son of Meshezabel, repaired. And next to them, Zadok, the son of Benah, repaired. You feel lost in the crowd yet? This goes on for a whole nother chapter. It takes another 10 verses before we even meet our main character, Malchijah. So let's just hop right there. Verse 14. Malchijah, the son of Rechab, ruler of the district of Beth Hacharem. Now, pay attention to that. He's a ruler. It's important later. He repaired the dung gate. He rebuilt it, set its doors, its bolts, and its bars. Let me ask you a question. Do you think Malchijah felt like a somebody? Do you think he felt like a somebody? He wasn't even the only guy named Malchijah working on the wall. I mean, those days there were Malchijahs everywhere. He's not the only one. And here's a different question for us. How would you feel? How would you feel if you were Malchijah? Because I can tell you exactly how I would feel. I would feel disappointed, maybe a little bit frustrated, maybe even a bit cynical about the whole thing. Here's what's important for this morning. I am 99.9% sure that that is not how Malchijah felt. And I say that because we know for certain that Malchijah was a volunteer. Malchijah voluntarily spent 6 months of his life without pay, stepping aside from a cush job as a ruler of a nearby district to spend his every waking moment under the Middle Eastern sun, back aching, hands cut apart, feet throbbing. And he did it knowing it wasn't going to make him a somebody. He did it knowing that he was just going to be another face in the crowd. So why? Why? I mean, why would anybody do something like that? I want to know. I think we need to know because right now our culture tells us that if we want to live a meaningful, full, fulfilled life, then we have to be a somebody. Then we have to be a somebody. I'm not saying be a celebrity, just be a somebody in our circles. And yet the truth is, at least for me, and I'm guessing for most of us, we're probably not going to be a somebody. In fact, we're probably going to spend most of our lives as faces in the crowd. That's just the truth. And so if Malchijah discovered a way to live a meaningful, full, fulfilled life as a face in the crowd, then I have to know his secret. I need to know his secret. William McRaven, he is a 4-star admiral in the U.S. Navy. And in his memoir, he tells stories about his training as a U.S. Navy SEAL. Now, if you don't know it, U.S. Navy SEAL training is the most difficult training in the entire military. And the most difficult week of that training is called Hell Week. And in his memoir, he talks about the most difficult day of the most difficult week of the most difficult training in all of U.S. military training. He talks about how they had been under near constant physical exertion with very little sleep, and as a result, they made an infraction of the rules, just a tiny little infraction. And so as a consequence, their drill instructor takes them down to the San Juan mud flats, and he tells them to go and wade into neck-deep, freezing cold mud. And he says, here's your job. You are going to stand here from sundown until sunrise, and then we'll come back. They're standing there for hours, more tired, more mentally and physically exhausted than they've ever been in their lives. They are freezing. They are miserable. And the drill instructors come back after just a few hours. And off in the distance, where everyone can see it, they build a fire. And one of the drill instructors walks up to them and he says, hey, how would you guys like to go by that fire? We've got chicken noodle soup. We've got coffee. We've got chairs. We've got blankets. It's great by that fire. Who wants to go by that fire? All of us can go. Every single one of you can go if just 5 of you quit right now. Just five, that's all I need. McRaven's standing there, more tired, more mentally exhausted, more physically exhausted than he's ever been. And the guy right in front of him starts walking forward to quit. And McRaven reaches out, he grabs him, but the guy pulls away. He's gonna go quit. And another guy goes, and another guy, and another guy, and another guy. And right before they get to the drill instructor, right before they can say that they're going to quit, behind McRaven, a single voice starts singing out. He's not singing well, but he's singing loudly, and he's singing a song that all of them know because it's a Navy SEAL song. It's a song about past victories, past glories, past heroes. It's a song about their hope to carry that legacy forward into the future, to be a part of the next chapter of the Navy SEALs. And more voices start joining in to the chorus. And the five guys who are getting ready to quit, each one of them stops and they start listening and they're hearing and they're listening and they're remembering all the reasons why they signed up to be SEALs in the first place. Because they want to be a part of the next chapter in that story. They want to be a part of the next chapter. One by one, each one starts turning around, joins his voice into the song, walks back out into the crowd of recruitees. And the drill instructor, he's yelling at them. He's saying, you guys gotta stop singing. You're not allowed to sing. But they just sing all the louder because they got it. They got it. They wanted a role in the next chapter of the Navy SEALs, even if it meant freezing in neck-deep mud. I think that's kind of what happened to Malkijah. He obviously wasn't trained to be a SEAL. It wasn't military training, nothing like that. But I think he heard that God was writing the next chapter in his story, and he wanted to play a role in it, even if it meant just being a face in the crowd. You see, in the weeks leading up to Malkijah's volunteer service, a Jew named Nehemiah showed up, and he had a remarkable claim. He said that the God of their ancestors was writing the next chapter of his story right there in history in their real lives. And we can read about the speech, an abbreviated form of the speech that Nehemiah gave to everyone in Nehemiah 2, verses 17 to 18. So I, this is Nehemiah speaking, said to them, this crowd of potential workers, they all haven't agreed yet, he's trying to convince them, you see the trouble that we are in. Jerusalem is in ruins. Its gates are destroyed by fire. So like all stories, there's a problem. Come, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem so that we won't continue to be in disgrace. Now, of course, people in the crowd are thinking, well, why should we do that? Why should we volunteer? I mean, we get why we need a wall, but why? And I told them of the hand of my God that had been upon me for good, and also the words that the king had spoken to me. So Nehemiah goes on to tell them that God's hand is at work writing the next chapter in his story, and that he's already working through Nehemiah, and he's already working through the most powerful king in the world, the king of Persia. And Nehemiah is saying, look, God's writing the next chapter, but here's the deal. The story cannot keep going on unless you guys take a role, unless you guys step into the story. So what do you say? Do you want to be a part of the story? Let's see how they responded. Let's start rebuilding, they said. And they eagerly, cheerfully, joyfully, happily began the work. Malkijah was probably in that crowd on that morning. And I think he got it. I think he saw that there was a problem, but he also saw that God was writing the next chapter in his story. And believing that truth, that God was writing the next chapter in his story right there in his life, in real history, it freed Malkijah to be a nobody. It freed Malkijah to be a face in the crowd. And here's why, because he got that if he took a role in this story, he was gonna be a part of something so much bigger than himself. He was gonna be a part of something that was going to last into eternity. It was so much bigger. Here's a question for you. Can you name the somebodies in Colombia 50 years ago? Can you name the somebodies in Colombia 50 years ago? The people who were in the headlines, the big deal professors, the big deal entrepreneurs. Can you name who got the biggest paycheck? Who was the biggest deal social life? Can you name anybody who was a somebody in Colombia 50 years ago? I can't. And even if you become the biggest somebody in this room, even if you become the biggest somebody in this room, can we just be honest for a second and say no one's gonna remember it in 50 years? So why in the world do we settle for being a somebody when we can be a part of a story that does not have an expiration date? Why settle for being a somebody when we can be a part of a story that has an eternal legacy? Why settle for being a somebody when we can be a part of the biggest story that has ever been told? Because here's the truth. God isn't done writing yet. God is not done writing his story yet. He is still going. I don't know if you've noticed this. Every gospel ends with a cliffhanger. And the book of Acts, which tells the story of Jesus' first disciples, it ends without an ending. There's no ending. And I think that's the point, because God's story hasn't ended yet. It's still going on. And I don't know if we're in chapter 32 or 56 or 133. That doesn't matter. Here's what matters. God is still writing his story right here, right now, in our lives and history. Do you believe that? Do you believe that God is writing his story in your life, in your house, at your apartment, at your desk, in your office, at your cubicle, at the auto shop where you work, at the restaurant where you wait? Do you believe that God is still writing his story right there in history, in your life? Because if you don't, nothing I say is going to matter this morning. None of it's going to make any sense unless you believe that truth, that there is a meaningful, worthwhile, full life to be lived as a face in the crowd, if you've taken a role in God's story. So practically, what does that look like? What does it look like for us to actually take a role in God's story? And again, I think Malchijah can be our guide. So let's hop back into verse 14. Malchijah, the son of Rechab, ruler of the district of Beth-Hakarem, repaired the dung gate. He rebuilt it, set its doors, its bolts, and its bars. So we need to ask a question. What is a dung gate? Okay? It's exactly what it sounds like. So in a world without sewers, without toilets, it was the responsibility of every person in each family to collect all of their own human refuse. Feces, urine, rotting food. And then it was your responsibility to cart it for sanitary purposes outside of the city through the dung gate to a burning dump right outside of the gate. The dung gate was the gate through which everyone brought their business, right? And so you gotta think what it's like to be the guy building this gate. Think about the sights you're gonna see. Think about the smells you're gonna smell. And here's the deal, you know, when you're carrying that kind of stuff, things slosh. There is spillage. And so I like to imagine everybody sitting around trying to decide, okay, who's gonna rebuild what part of the wall? This is the part no one signs up for. This is the part that you expect the least influential person to end up serving at. And yet we know Malchijah isn't uninfluential. He's a ruler. He's a ruler of a nearby district, which makes me ask the question, well, is that just how all the rulers acted? Did they all just take the low jobs? Let's see. In verse 5, we read this. The Tekoites repaired. So people from the nearby city of Tekoa, they repaired. But their nobles would not stoop to serve the Lord. So the nobles of Tekoa, they say, look, we're not going to put our hands to hammers. We're not going to lug around stones. We are above that. But Malchijah, he not only says, hey, I'll volunteer, I'll work. He says, sign me up for the worst place. I'll be the guy who repairs the dung gate. And I think it's because he got that taking a role in God's story is rarely glamorous. In fact, it most often happens at the dung gates in our world. There's a leader here at the Crossing, and he owns a lumber yard. And during the recession, his business was dipping, and he was trying to figure out a way to keep all of his employees on payroll, and he wasn't sure he was going to be able to do it. And so he's racking his brain. He's trying to figure out ways to save money. And he finally comes upon one. He realizes, he says, if we can cancel this cleaning service that we use, I'm going to be able to keep everyone on payroll. But there's a catch. We're all going to have to pitch in to clean. And that's not so bad, right? If you get to keep your job, until you see the toilets at a lumber yard. Now, he could have easily said, look, I'm the owner. I don't want to clean anything. But you know what he said? He said, sign me up. I'll take the worst job. I'll be the guy who cleans the toilets. Do you want to see God's story unfold on earth as in heaven? Watch a guy scrub a toilet. That's it. I hope we get what this means. This means that changing your daughter's diaper is a sacred story. This means that cleaning your roommate's dishes cheerfully is a kingdom narrative. It means that driving an hour out of your way to go help your mother-in-law who has dementia, that's a Bible story. It means that helping a client who's just been an absolute jerk to you on the phone actually find a better deal, that could be a parable. It means that taking the project at work that everybody else does not want, that's a story worth hearing. It means that grabbing lunch with the person that everybody else ignores, who you know is not gonna be able to help you network with the who's who, that's a story worthy of a biographer's time. If we spend our entire lives fighting, clawing to be a somebody, we'll never go to the dung gates in our lives. And as a result, we will miss out on our role in God's story. If you're fighting to be a somebody, you're not going to have the strength to take a humble role. If we're fighting to be a somebody, we don't even like these kinds of stories. But here's the truth. Jesus saved our lives by living one of these stories. And so is it any surprise that Jesus, and Jesus alone, is able to give us the grace to be a nobody, the grace to be a face in the crowd? Let me ask you a question. Where are the dung gates in your life? The tough jobs, the dirty jobs, the hard relationships, the places everybody else avoids. Where are the dung gates in your life? Because those places are the stage for God's eternal story. They're the stage. A final question for us to consider. What about all the other ordinary moments in our lives? You know what I'm talking about. Because realistically, we don't spend our whole life just serving and sacrificing. That's not any of us. What about just the ordinary face in a crowd moments? When you're just a face in a big class, when you're just a face in a big church, when you're just a face at a big workplace, at a big hospital. What about those moments when we're just working in our little corners of the world, right? You know, maybe it's at the daycare or at the bank or at the construction site, remotely from home. I don't know. Can God transform those moments, those normal, ordinary moments, into places of meaning, of worth, of value? Can we experience God's purpose in those places? Hey, I want to show you three pictures, okay? And there are three different basketball hoops, and they are all very, very special. But I want you to see if you can guess why. So let's go and do the first one. All right, what's special here? Let's go to the next one. Let's do the next one. All right, did you see it? Did you see what was so special? Let's hop back in, I'll explain it. So this is the shed behind Larry Bird's house. It's where he learned to play the game. Let's go to the next one. That's Shaquille O'Neal's middle school basketball court, and that is LeBron's high school basketball court where he learned to play the game. Those places, if I ask you what they are, you don't know. But it's not what they are really that makes them special, right? It's not what they are. It's who played there that makes them so special. And I think that's what Malchijah got. He got that his backbreaking work, it's not what he was doing that was so special. It was who was there with him. It's not what was going on that made it so important. It was who was there with him. It was God. God was with him. And here's the deal. In your most ordinary moments, God is with you. God is guiding you. God is strengthening you. God is unfolding his story, his kingdom through you. When you're brushing your teeth, when you're going to the bathroom, when you're eating your lunch, when you're paying your bills, when you're worrying about your bills, when you're mowing the lawn, in all of those ordinary moments, do we get so focused on what we're doing that we forget who is there with us, guiding us, strengthening us, unfolding his story through us? Because Jesus is there in all those moments. When we're so stressed and stretched for time that the best meal we can manage is getting through the Chick-fil-A drive-thru, Jesus is there. It's Chick-fil-A. low-hanging fruit. Okay. No, but in all seriousness, when there's dirty dishes to clean and clean laundry to fold, when you've got a project that's overdue, when you've got a conversation coming up with a boss who's usually just absolutely brutal to you, do we let what's happening distract us from who is there with us? From who is there with us? Because God is there. Jesus is there, strengthening, guiding, teaching, unfolding his story in those very ordinary, mundane moments. And since we easily forget, the real question is, how do we do that? How do we practice Jesus's presence in those absolutely normal moments? So as the worship team comes back up, I'm just gonna explore a few different ideas. And let's just start here. What did the Navy SEALs do? They sang. The Navy SEALs sang. They sang songs that turned their everyday, mud-covered, ordinary moments into glory, that turned those moments into God's story. What can we sing? What prayers can we say to God? Just 2 or 3 seconds throughout our day. Maybe when we're feeling anxious, we just quote to ourselves 1 Peter 5:6, cast your anxieties on God because he cares. I cast my anxieties on you, God, because you care. Or maybe when we're walking into a meeting with coworkers, we sing a song that we learned here. Just 2 or 3 seconds, we just say, in every eye that sees me, Christ be all around me. Or maybe when we're anxious about a conversation that's coming up, we just sing to ourselves, you are my help, you are my rescue. This week, ask God for grace. Ask God for the strength to develop this reflex in your life. The moments when you want to pull out your phone and check ESPN, check Instagram, just 2 seconds, 3 seconds, just pray a word to God. Sing a word to God about where your heart's at. When you sit down at your desk and you want to start typing on emails, checking everything really, really quick, 2 or 3 seconds, just pray. Just sing a song to God. Let him know where you're at. When you get into the car, turn off the radio. 2 or 3 seconds, just pray to God about where you're at. When you're opening the door to pull your toddler out of the crib, 2 or 3 seconds before you do it, to pray, to sing a song to God. I think you will be amazed what happens when you start practicing Jesus' presence in all of those ordinary, everyday moments. You will discover that every single one of them is glory. Every single one of them is part of the bigger story. Jesus is with you right now as you are, as a face in the crowd. Whether you're at that dung gate or this dung gate in your life, he alone can give you the joy and the strength to not get focused on the what's, to not get focused on being a somebody. We'll just be disappointed and obsessed. No, instead to focus on the who is with you, and he is with you. Amen.